Everyone knows the story of Samson and Delilah, but sometimes his story doesn't seem very edifying. Was Samson a good guy? Do you want to understand the Bible, but you're confused? You've come to the right place. This is Tough Bible Questions on Timothy Talks, where I'm going to work through answers to your questions about the tough, challenging, and sometimes flat-out weird sections of the Bible. Thank you so much for tuning in today to Timothy Talks Season 4, Tough Bible Questions. Today's question is really difficult and really interesting. Was Samson a good guy? My name is Daniel Pentamone. I'm hosting the show today, and I'm so glad you're here. Samson is one of those guys that makes for great Sunday school lessons. Sort of. He's colorful, he's charismatic, he's fun to tell kids about how he carried off the gates of a city on his shoulders, but maybe don't tell them why he was in the city in the first place. Or Samson and Delilah, it's a great story, it's an interesting story, but it doesn't really make Samson out as a great role model. So what should we think about this guy named Samson? And how does the Bible present him? Well, let's start by reviewing the story of Samson, and then we'll get some data about him and actually examine what it says. So the story of Samson is found in the book of Judges, chapters 13 through 16. The book of Judges tells the story of Israel before there was a king. And it's really surprising as you read the book of Judges to see how much time is given to the story of Samson. He occupies a major role in this book. He's almost the central figure of the book of Judges. So let's just work through these passages of Scripture, Judges 13 through 16. First of all, the first incident of Samson's life is his birth. This is in Judges 13. So here's the setting of the story. There's a guy, his name is Manoah, and he has a wife. And Manoah and his wife are visited on more than one occasion by an angel. And this is what the angel says to his wife. "Behold, you are barren and have not borne children, but you shall conceive and bear a son. Therefore be careful, and drink no wine or strong drink, and eat nothing unclean. For behold, you shall conceive and bear a son. No razor shall come upon his head, for the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb, and he shall begin to save Israel from the hand of the Philistines." So what you got here is this angel making a promise to this lady. And he says in particular that the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb. So what is a Nazarite? Well, a Nazarite was a special class of Israelites who were devoted to God. They lived a life of devotion to God. And they had some special instructions. There were certain things that they could not eat, and there were certain things they could not touch. They could never drink wine, they could never cut their hair, and they were never to touch dead carcasses. And obviously this is going to be a very significant part of the story of Samson, is that he is a Nazarite, and he's living life with certain restrictions to what he can do and what he can't do. Now notice this phrase as well. "He shall begin to save Israel from the hand of the Philistines." We all know about these guys, the Philistines. They're the bad guys of the Bible. But specifically, they are a people group who lived on the coastlands of Israel. They lived around five major cities, the five cities of the Philistines. And they seem to have come from Greek islands. So possibly places like Crete or other island areas like that. They sail on ships. According to the historical record, it appears that they sail on ships. And at some point, they reach the coastlands of Israel, and they settle on these coastlands, and they're known as the Philistines. In fact, that's actually the same word that we get the land of Palestine. Palestine, notice the letters P-L-S-T, and then you have Philistines, again, P-L-S-T. So Philistines give their name to the land of Palestine. The Philistines were idolaters. They worshipped a god called Dagon. And they were also the notorious enemies of God's people. One of the most famous Philistines was Goliath, the same guy that David killed with a slingshot. Goliath is a Philistine, and many of the early wars of the Hebrews were against this people group known as the Philistines. Samson, we're told even before his birth, shall begin to save Israel from the hand of the Philistines. Well, this chapter ends with the birth of Samson, and the last verse of the chapter says this: "The Spirit of the Lord began to stir him in Mahanah Dan between Zorah and Eshtaol. And that's where we end. We end with this promise of a man who's going to come, a man devoted to God, who's going to begin to save Israel, and he's born, and then the Spirit of the Lord begins to stir him. And we're not really sure what that means, but we're going to keep reading. We come to Judges 14. This is the story of Samson's marriage, and it is the farthest thing that you can imagine from a sweet little love story. Here's how it goes. So Samson's growing up. He's a teenager. He's a young man. And one day Samson sees a Philistine girl and he falls in love with her. He tells his parents and, well, they're not the most happy about it. I mean, really, Samson? There's all these great Hebrew ladies all around. And why do you have to marry one of the daughters of the enemy of our people? Well, anyways, there's this little diversion in the story. One day Samson goes on a walk and he sees a lion. And when he sees the lion, God's spirit comes on him in a powerful way. He grabs the lion and he tears it apart. Interesting side note, but sometime later, Samson is going on another walk and he's in the same area. And so he decides that he wants to see the carcass of the lion that he had killed. He goes and while he's there, he finds that a swarm of bees has invaded the lion carcass. So he gets some fresh honey out of the carcass and he gives it to his parents, but he doesn't say where he got the honey from. Oops. Big problem, Samson. You just broke that Nazirite vow that you're not supposed to touch a dead carcass. Well, anyways, Samson's pretty headstrong at this point in his life. He actually always is headstrong throughout his life. And he marries the girl, the Philistine girl, and they have a big party, 7 days of partying. At the party, he makes a bet with the Philistine guys. He says, listen to me, guys, answer my riddle. If you can do so, I'll give you hundreds of dollars worth of expensive clothing. If you can't, though, here's what happens. You have to give me hundreds of dollars worth of expensive clothing. And the guys agree to Samson's bet. So Samson gives them this riddle, and the riddle goes like this. Out of the eater came something to eat. Out of the strong came something sweet. That's the riddle. And so they've got some time to puzzle over it. And the guys start to puzzle and they think and they wonder about it. For 3 days, they puzzle over it without any success. Finally, they decide on something a little more sinister. They go to Samson's bride and they demand that she find the answer out. Go to Samson and find out what the answer is to this riddle. Or we're going to turn on you and turn you and your family into kindling in a big bonfire. Well, the thought of being turned into a barbecue persuades this bride pretty quick. She goes to Samson, and at first he doesn't really want to tell her. He hasn't told anyone. Why would he even tell her? But after a while, he does relent. He tells her it's about a lion, honey coming out of a lion. Well, at the end of the party, the guys come to Samson, and they give him the answer. The answer is this riddle is about honey that comes out of a lion. Well, now Samson is doubly upset. Not only does he have to give them a lot of expensive clothing, but he knows that his bride is working for his enemies. It's not the greatest end to his party. In fact, Samson's so angry that he heads to a Philistine village. He kills 30 guys, he takes all their clothes, and uses them to pay his gambling debt. But he is mad. He is hopping mad. He heads back to his parents' house. And the Philistines, well, they say, ugh. That Samson guy, we really didn't like that guy anyways. But his wife, woo, she's a cutie. And guess what? Samson's best man marries Samson's bride. Talk about adding insult to injury. Poor Samson. Not the best wedding story that you've ever heard. And then we come to Judges 15. Samson's vengeance against the Philistines. So here's how the story picks up. One day, Samson decides that maybe he still loved his bride. So he decides that he wants to see her again. Maybe spend some really personal, cozy time with her. So he heads to her parents' house with a gift. But it seems that when he gets there, her dad doesn't let him into the house. Samson protests. He says, I just want to see my wife. Didn't I marry her? But her dad says, hey, listen, I thought you were over her. I already gave her to your friend. He already married her. No, you cannot spend time with her. But, hey, by the way, her sister, she's way more beautiful than she is. Why don't you marry her? Well, you can imagine, Samson is pretty angry about this. And so he decides to teach the Philistines a lesson. He catches 300 foxes, he ties them together in pairs by the tail, and he ties a torch to their tails. He lights a torch, he sends them into the Philistine croplands, burning the croplands down. You can imagine, you take two foxes, you set their tails on fire. They're not going to coordinate which way to run. They're both going to be running, but they're not going to be able to run with a lot of direction. And so they're just going to run madly through this field, back and forth, sometimes the one dragging the other, sometimes the other dragging the one, and they burn up these croplands. Well, at this point, not only is Samson mad, but now the Philistines are mad. But for whatever reason, they decide not to take it out on Samson, but on Samson's former bride. They do just what they promised to her earlier. They turn her and her family into a bonfire. And that's the end of Samson's bride. Well, this didn't really help Samson. He wasn't more happy at the end of this. He's even madder. He goes on a rampage through their lands, just killing Philistines left and right. At this point, the Philistines say, "We've got to do something. This isn't working. This man, Samson, is ruining our lives." And so they make a raid to capture Samson. Now, Samson's living with his Hebrew countrymen, but Samson's Hebrew countrymen don't want to get in the middle of this, and so they make a deal with the Philistines. If the Philistines will leave the Hebrews alone, they will hand him Samson. And Samson actually agrees to this. When his Hebrew countrymen come, he says, "You know what? I agree. If you bind me with ropes, I will let you take me to the Philistines. But here's the deal. You don't attack me yourselves personally." And they say, "Sure, we won't attack you. We're just going to tie you up and give you to your enemies." And Samson says, "Okay, we'll do this." Everyone's happy. They tie him up. They take him to the Philistines. And the Philistines are overjoyed. But all of a sudden, Samson breaks those cords apart as if they were like little tiny threads. The Spirit of God comes on him mightily. He breaks the ropes, and then he grabs the jawbone of a donkey that must have been laying nearby. He picks it up, and he kills Philistines with it. Just starts, we can imagine, bamming them on the head with this jawbone of a donkey. And he kills 1,000 Philistines as a result of this. And the chapter ends, and Samson judges Israel for 20 years. Now, we don't really know what happened during those years. Were they calm years? Were they peaceful years? We don't really know what happened. But Samson is judging Israel for 20 years. Then we come to Judges chapter 16, the final episode in the life of Samson. Samson is undone by love or maybe by lust. Here's the setting. Samson goes up to Gaza. Gaza is one of the fortresses of the Philistines. I said earlier that the Philistines have 5 cities, and this is one of them. And while he is in Gaza, he sees a prostitute. Yes, it's a sordid part of the story, but it's what the Bible says. He sees a prostitute, and he decides that he wants to be with her, so he does. It turns out the Philistines don't notice that. They have their spies. They see Samson come in, and they create an ambush to kill him. But Samson is pretty smart. He also knows that they know. And so he decides he's going to sneak out of the city in the middle of the night. So he stays with this woman until the middle of the night. Then he gets up. He walks right up to the gates of the city, and he pulls them out of the ground, doors and posts and all, and carries them away, all the way up a hill. And here's the amazing thing. This gate would have weighed hundreds of pounds. And here's what's even more amazing. He carries them almost 40 miles on his shoulders to the top of this hill. The point here is, this is an extraordinary thing. No human being can do this. Only one who has the Spirit of God is able to do such an astonishing feat. This isn't just something that a bodybuilder can do, in other words. Anyways, moving on in the story, Samson falls in love again, this time with Delilah. And the Philistines see that this is his weakness, so they barter with Delilah. If she will find out what makes Samson so powerful, they will reward her handsomely. Well, Samson doesn't want to give away his secret. He deceives Delilah several times, keeps telling her things that aren't true. She passes on the wrong information to the Philistines. But eventually, it happens. Samson is so tired of it that he tells the secret to Delilah. He has never cut his hair, and that is why he is so powerful. So you know what Delilah does. As soon as Samson falls asleep, she makes sure that he gets a haircut. At this point, the Philistines come in. They seize him. Even as he is laying in Delilah's lap, she wakes him up and says, "The Philistines are upon you." And he wakes up in a start. He intends to go out and stop the Philistines, but all of a sudden he finds his hair is cut, his power is gone, and he is weak like every other man. The Philistines are overjoyed. They seize him, they gouge out his eyeballs, and then they throw him in prison and make him grind in a mill. But what do you do when you catch your worst enemy? Well, you party, of course. So after a while, the Philistines decide to do this. Why not throw a big party and make the big, strong, mighty Samson into the court fool? That's their idea of how they'll have fun. Samson will dawdle around, bumping into things since he can't even see. Everyone will have a good laugh at his expense, right? I mean, maybe they'll even poke him, prick him, torment him a little bit. And because he's blind, he won't see where his misery is coming from. It's just the kind of party that you want to have, right? Where you torment your blind enemy. Well, hopefully that's not your idea of fun, but that's the Philistines' idea of fun. Of course, there's one thing that they forgot about. They haven't been paying attention to make sure that Samson gets his weekly shave. That's right, Samson's hair kept growing. So they do this. They throw a party. And Samson keeps them entertained for a while. We don't know how long, maybe a couple of hours. But at some point, Samson is just worn out by everything that's going on. And so he asks one of the guys, would you just let me rest my hands on the two pillars of this house? And so they do that. They put his hands on the two pillars of this house. And as Samson is leaning up against these two pillars, he suddenly prays, oh Lord God, please remember me and please strengthen me only this once, oh God, that I may be avenged on the Philistines for my two eyes. Then, crying out that he might die with them, he pushes with all his might, and guess what? Those two pillars come crashing down, and with them, the whole house comes crashing down. Now, we're told that 3,000 people were on this house and on the rooftop. So this probably wasn't just like a private residence. It was probably more a palace or a government building that housed some important government figures. And it seems that at least a majority of these 3,000 people die. So Samson dies, and with him, thousands of Philistines. More die in his death than he killed in all of his life. Even in his death, we have this question lingering. Does Samson commit suicide? I mean, he did die in this disaster. He caused the disaster and he even asks to die. Now, I would tend to see his death here not so much as a suicide, more sort of like an honor death. But even so, I mean, it does raise this question. Samson did die in what he caused. And he seems to go out pretty hopelessly. Maybe he knew that the end had come. Maybe he just wanted to go out gloriously. But still, from start to finish, Samson probably doesn't just seem like an ideal role model for your life, especially not in his love life. Well, again, there's a little bit more to the story, and I want to touch on this as we ask this question, was Samson a good guy? But first, let's take a quick break. Now it's your turn. This season at Timothy Talks, the goal is to answer your tough Bible questions. So, do you have a tough Bible question? If so, email it to timothytalkspodcast@gmail.com. That's timothytalkspodcast@gmail.com. Plus, every time you send a tough Bible question, you'll get a chance to win a Bible study resource of your choice so that you can understand the Bible even better. We might devote a whole podcast episode to answering your tough Bible question. So welcome back. Continuing to talk about the life of Samson, what I've just done is given you an overview of the life of Samson. So even if you weren't really familiar with him, you know the problems now with Samson. And it really does make us wonder, why is Samson's story even included in the Bible? Like, obviously he killed some Philistines, but in the scheme of things, if the Bible is a book about God, why are we even highlighting someone like him? Well, first of all, I just want to give you the perspective that the writer of Hebrews says. In the New Testament, Hebrews chapter 11, verses 32 through 34, it says, "And what more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David, and Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight." So all of this, we're told, happened through faith. And in fact, this passage in Hebrews comes at the end of what's known as the Hall of Faith, where the writer of Hebrews is listing out all of these different people who did phenomenal things through faith. We don't even have time to talk about people like Samson, who did these remarkable things through faith. Now, obviously, once you read the account of Samson, you're like, well, was that faith or was that just vengeance? I mean, what's going on here? How do we reconcile this? Well, I want to give us a few thoughts that hopefully will help you to come to some sort of a reconciliation between the Old Testament picture that you had of Samson and then the New Testament picture where he seems to be held up as a role model of one who lived by faith. The first thing that we should notice is that the time of the Old Testament and the time of the New Testament are different. And this is, for one, you see this with the way that the Spirit of God works. So obviously, in the Gospels, Jesus tells his disciples, especially in the book of John, that he's going to send the Comforter, which is the Holy Spirit, to come, and the Spirit will be with them. And there's this change that happens at that point. And after the day of Pentecost especially, you just notice this change in how the Spirit works. But when you read about the Spirit in the Old Testament, what you have is a Spirit who comes on people in remarkable ways, the same way that he came on Samson. The Spirit comes on people in these remarkable ways, and then, in a strange way, the Spirit seems to leave people just as quickly as it comes. Whereas today in the New Testament, we have, and in the New Testament times, we have the Spirit coming and being with that person so that even now, in the Christian era, when you are a believer, the Spirit of God is there, and the Spirit of God is at work in your life. He doesn't just drop in, do some remarkable things in your life, and then pull out. No, the Spirit's there. So there is this interesting thing. Another thing, though, that we should pay attention to is that we shouldn't look to the Old Testament, to some extent, we shouldn't look to the Old Testament as an example of morality. Now, the people in the Old Testament, they certainly are examples to us of following after God. They are certainly examples to us sometimes of not following after God. And there's much that we can learn from the people of the Old Testament. But we also have to realize that there is a change of things. You have to realize, in the Old Testament, God is working with a group of people. He's working with them and bringing them to the point where they are ready for the Messiah to come. In the New Testament, he's already worked with them. The Messiah has already come. So some of the things that you see going on in the Old Testament, they didn't have as much scripture as we have. God hadn't worked in their society to bring people to that point that we're already at today. That's why Abraham can do some of the things that he did. For example, he's married to Sarah, and then he has a concubine, and things like that that we would say there's no room, there's no place for that in the New Testament. And yet in the Old Testament, well, Abraham is a work in progress, and he's at a different point in God's work in history than we are. And so we look at Samson through a slightly different lens, different perspective. I think that is a fair thing to say. The second thing that we have to recognize when we are talking about Samson is that Samson's story is included in the book of Judges. And Judges is a book that was written for a purpose. So here's the thing. Whenever you come to Old Testament history, whether you're reading the book of Judges, the book of Joshua, the books of the Kings, of Chronicles, whatever you're reading, that history is written with a purpose. It's not simply a chronological record of everything that happened. Because, I mean, this is the same problem that historians face today. If you're going to write about everything that happened, there's way too much. You can never recount everything that happened. So every historian, by default, has to be selective in what they write. Which events are important to the historian? He's going to include those in his history book, and that's true today just as much as it was true in ancient times. Well, the book of Judges is selective, and it's selective because the writer is trying to prove a point. Now, today, if a historian says, I'm writing a book, and I'm trying to prove a point in my writing as I write history, we would all look at that historian and we would say, you're so biased. You can't come to write history with a reason why you're writing it. You just have to write the history, and then we'll draw our conclusions from it. And that's what we would say to a historian who did that today. The reality is every historian is going to emphasize the things that they think are valuable. And they are, whether consciously or unconsciously, they are writing with a purpose, to share with you the things that they see are value. That's why they include certain things, and that's why they don't include other things that they could include in their history. It's the same way in the Old Testament. They are writing for a purpose. And so they are going to include incidents from Israel's history for a purpose. They're going to highlight the story of Samson for a purpose. Well, what's the purpose of the book of Judges? Well, one of the clues that we get from the book of Judges is the verse that we come across several times in the book that talks about the fact that every man does what is right in his own eyes. So this is a period of lawlessness. It's a period of chaos in Israel's history. And the author of Judges is highlighting this, and he's highlighting what happens to a society, even to God's people, when they are no longer governed. Not only they're not governed by a king, but they're not even governed by the theocracy that God put in place to rule his chosen people. Instead, it's anarchy. Every person does what they want to do. And so what he's doing in the book of Judges is he's showing us what happens when a society is at that point where they're not listening to God in their civil life. And he's also showing a decline that happens from the remarkable events of the book of Joshua, where the Israelites come into the promised land, they take over the promised land. But now there's a decline, and he's showing this decline and how things, they start out really good, but they get worse and worse and worse and worse as you continue. So this is the purpose of the book of Judges. There's actually probably several purposes, but this is a very important purpose as to why the book of Judges is written, to show and to trace this decline through Hebrew history. For example, at the very end of the book of Judges, you have this remarkable story, and I say it's remarkable, it's sort of like horrifying story, of the Benjamite War. And the Benjamite War, if you recollect it, it's this story of this man who's traveling through ancient Israel, him and his concubine, and terrible things happen to them, and there's just like ghastly violence that happens. And the tribe of Benjamin is responsible for doing these heinous things to his concubine. And so the nation comes together and they say this is wrong, and there's warfare and there's civil war going on because things have sunk to such a level that it's untenable. You can't do it. You can't live in a society that treats its own members like this. And so Judges is just tracing out what's happened to a society that has left the moorings, left God behind, not caring. And Samson is an important person in tracing this decline. But at the same time that Judges is tracing the decline just in society in general, it's also showing us that there's a decline even among God's people. So yes, among the people who really do have a relationship with God, there is still a decline. There are people who love God, who serve God, who are acting in faith, and yet even they don't seem to measure up to the men of the past, to men like Moses, to men like Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph. And so you see this decline even among those who really are true God-fearers. And I think that this is part of what you see with Samson. The incidents of Samson's life show that he, and especially if we take the New Testament, show that he is a man who does care about God. He's not completely godless. He's not gone over to paganism. But at the same time, even in someone like him, whom God is going to raise up to use as a judge of his people, this man also has a decline in his moral life that the book of Judges is tracing out to that. It's not telling us this so that we can model ourselves after him, but it is simply pointing out the sad record of what happens to a people that's not paying attention to God's word, and even to God's people, those who really do fear God, when they're not being careful in their spiritual lives. So what we see then is it's more than just the story of Samson here. Samson's story actually fits into the book of Judges in a very specific way. This means then that the author of Judges is selectively choosing stories from the life of Samson. Again, Samson's a judge for over 20 years, or at least 20 years, we can say. And there's certainly much to his story, but his story only takes a couple chapters in the book of Judges. Well, obviously he has to be selective. If we take the New Testament at what it says, that Samson is a man of faith, we could probably find many more examples of Samson's faith in his life. But Judges is choosing some of the worst incidents from Samson's life to paint the picture of the decline that's going on, not only in Samson's life, but also in Israel as a whole. Now, a question that you might have at this point, wasn't Samson a man who was racked by the desire for vengeance? And I would say, I don't think so. We do see vengeance in the life of Samson. We certainly see vengeance, but we also see, again, 20 years that we don't really have a lot of information for. We just have a few points where vengeance is a driving force of his life. So to say that Samson is a man who was just racked by vengeance for his whole life, well, I don't think that the biblical testimony really, I don't think you can really prove that from taking a few incidents. Just like if I was to write a book about your life, if I were to highlight some of the worst incidents in your life, I could probably portray you as a person in moral decline. But you might say, well, that's not a full picture of who I am, because there's more that you haven't looked at and that you haven't recorded that data. Instead, Samson is a man who knows that he is called to judge God's people. And as a Nazirite, he would have had that special relationship with God, and he knows that the Philistines are the enemies of God's people. So Samson, he does get personally really angry with the Philistines, but he's also doing it as one who is angry with God's enemies. And I want to turn your attention back to what the angel said to Samson's parents. The angel said, "He shall begin to save Israel from the hand of the Philistines." Now, I'm going to assume that Samson's parents told him about that message, that they recounted to him in his childhood or in his teenage years, "This is how you were born. You were born miraculously, and this angel appeared to us." And I'm sure that they told him this line, "The angel told us that you would begin to save Israel from the hand of the Philistines." Now, the way that God works sometimes is he uses our own personal motives sometimes to spur us on to do the things that he wants. And it seems that that happens in Samson's life. So Samson knows that his role is to save Israel from the hand of the Philistines, but God also uses a little desire for vengeance and a little anger as well, mix that in, as some of the reasons to motivate Samson to actually go out and do what God is calling him to do. Now, that might be regrettable, and you might wish that Samson had the purest motives, and that would be great, but honestly, if we think about ourselves, like, do you always do God's work with the purest motives? Unfortunately, we don't. Even as Christians, we don't always do God's work with the purest motives every time. And the sad thing is that we see that in Samson's life, but it's a fact of life, and it just happens, and that is what happened in Samson's life. Again, Samson is in the role of a judge. He holds power and authority, at least for some of the time, of these events that we're talking about. So he isn't like he's some lone ranger out there killing people. He is, in a sense, the head of the government, so to speak, of the Hebrew people, because he is one of their judges. He is the one who holds judicial authority among them and who is tasked with this role of destroying their enemies. So what this is to say, we're not trying to gloss over Samson's sins. Samson's sins are significant, and as we saw, they led to his downfall. And when you read the story of Samson, you can't go away from that story without seeing that. Samson's sins lead to his downfall, especially his relationship with Delilah and how he allowed that to become so important to him that he was willing to give away the secret of his God-given strength. This isn't to gloss over those sins. This is to say that Samson was a man who had flaws, he had deep flaws, but God used even a man with his flaws to deliver the chosen people of Israel. And yes, this is a low point in Israel's history. This is a point where even the best men have low morals. Even God's special Nazirites are at a very low ebb. And we don't say that that's good, we don't say that's in any way what we are called to as Christians, but we're saying even in that time, God has people, and even with their flaws, he still uses them to accomplish his purposes. And sometimes, maybe even sometimes, even when their motives aren't always perfect, there's still faith deep down in there that's the reason why God is using these people. Well, thank you so much for listening. I hope that this was helpful as you wrestle through the story of Samson and who he is and what it means as you read that story. Again, if you have a Bible question, like you heard in the little break, just feel free to send us Bible questions. I'd love to answer your tough Bible questions. So thank you for joining. It's always great to have you. I appreciate all of the listeners to this show, so thank you so much for tuning in. Again, I'd invite you to join next week. I'm going to be answering the question, the topic really, a prophet killing little boys. It's a very vivid account in the book of the 2 Kings, of a prophet who's killing little boys? How is this in the Bible? Well, if you've not already, also let me invite you to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And if you enjoyed today's show, it would mean so much to me if you would share this with your family and friends. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.